WRCT 88.3 FM. My name's DJ Tony Tunes, and you just heard Love You to Death, Promises You Made, and It Must Be Love by Ethosign. All songs that you can stream on all streaming platforms. But that closes up our Valentine's Day episode. Hope you all enjoyed, and I'll be seeing you all next weekend. Take care, and God bless.
A collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Mahwemana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, diversity, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
World Radio, 89.5 FM, Cape Town, South Africa, 88.7 FM, WRHU, Radio Hofstra University in New York. I'm Andy Gladding, taking a little spin around the world of music today. We have a very special guest on the line who will be visiting New York City later this week. Quetzal Flores brings a unique style of music rooted in East LA that celebrates a number of different cultural styles. So, Quetzal, welcome to One World. How are you, my friend?
Great, Andy. It's so good to be here.
It's great to have you. I've spent the last couple of days listening to your tracks, and I'm blown away by how much different cultural influence and style you guys are able to pack into this project. It's really cool because the music ranges, it ranges from Afro-Cuban and has jazz influences and even elements of rock. Really speaks to a lot of the musical stylings that I think come from your hometown of East LA. And having visited East LA and spent a little time in that area, I'm a little familiar with what you're up to. So tell us a little bit about what the band's all about, what the listener can expect when they come see you guys perform live.
Sure. So just to say that the band Quetzal has been in existence for 31 years now, and that we come from a longer line of bands and artists that we identify as Chicano rock. And beginning with, you know, different folks like Lalo Guerrero and certainly Richie Valens and folks like that, who were able to articulate our lived reality as people growing up in the barrios in East LA and other barrios around the Southwest, being able to articulate that reality in really amazing ways and really creative ways and not surrendering any of the experiences that we had. Because, you know, growing up in any generation, there was black music, there was, you know, the orchestral music, there was like all these different things happening around us. And then there was our traditional music, right? And so to be able to synthesize those things into an articulated sound, and then lyrically to be able to express the things that we're experiencing, both the struggles and the triumphs, right? And to be able to put that out and for our own community to see, but also for other communities to look at themselves and to offer the folks the ability to connect to the diverse experiences that humanity can hold all at once, you know, and to do away with these socialized confusions around like you only can be this or you only can be that, but no, you can be all these things at once. And it's beautiful and it's complex and it's sometimes messy, but this is exactly who we are. And so in the line of Chicano music, our predecessors, the immediate predecessors are Los Lobos, who are an incredible example of what I just described, right? And so so this is exactly the line that we're following and the tradition that we come from. And it's a very authentic and honest portrayal of who we are.
You talk about some of the history of the kind of music that you're playing. This comes from an area of Mexico called Veracruz, correct?
One of the traditions that we reference and often in our music that we, you know, weave into our music is the Son Jarocho. And the Son Jarocho is a musical genre style from southern Veracruz, Mexico. And it's a music that has a long history with Chicano music. But I'll go back to this moment that everybody knows about because, you know, because of the movie, because of the song, you know, et cetera. But when Richie Valens records La Bamba, that is part of the lexicon of Son Jarocho music, but then it becomes part of the lexicon of Chicano music as well when Richie does this. And oftentimes we have to look at that moment, what was happening socially. Not unlike today, there was a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment. There was a lot of policy that was creating like a xenophobia and of like literal violence against brown people. And so Richie was experiencing this as a young person and came from, you know, these communities where people were experiencing this And so then when it came time for him to be able to do the thing that he wanted to do, after, having a hit and then being able to like kind of decide which direction to go, he decided to stand firm in who he was and to really create a pathway for so many of us to look at ourselves and to feel beautiful and to feel human in the face of this, abject brutality that we experience sometimes as Black and Brown and Indigenous people and poor people all over this country. And so, that moment in history for me was so important because it created that link between Veracruz and Los Angeles, and East LA in particular. And it hasn't stopped. It's kept on going, and Los Lobos have done a fantastic job, have and had done a fantastic job in stewarding that sound and weaving it into their stuff through and through. And then, we're that new generation, and we were able to really build strong relationships with communities down there. And so that's like the next step, right? It's like, how do we go beyond just like borrowing the music, but having really deep relationships with the people that are creating the music, where the music's coming from and whatnot. Like that's an important step as well.
It's very interesting that you bring that up. A couple of things that stand out here. First of all, your productions and compositions obviously have been recognized internationally and domestically. You've received a Grammy and other accolades from organizations like the Smithsonian, and so there's obviously a cultural significance to what you're doing. The second thing, which I think a lot of people in the U.S. don't realize about the Chicanos, especially in East L.A., is that there's a group of people that are very proud of their heritage, that their Mexican heritage, but also I think what gets lost in that sometimes is are also very happy and proud to be part of America, which is evident by just I know just things I've seen from being in East L.A. You see a lot of pride in community. A lot of Chicanos have a bit local businesses and are trying to do things that will support and keep the money inside the community. So when you guys are composing and creating messaging through your music, who's your target? Are you trying to speak to the people that are on the American side, or are you just trying to, or are you looking towards a wider audience?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And the mother of Chicana feminism, Gloria Anzaldúa, rest in peace, one of our ancestors, she talks about the borderlands and it being this sort of in-between space that we exist in, firmly planted in ambiguity, is one of the terms she uses. And so, it's interesting to think about targets, because when we're writing, it's a very honest sort of narrative, right? And it's things that we're seeing, things that we're experiencing, and it is always about justice, okay? And it is not simply about justice for Chicano people. It is looking at our own community and saying these are the material conditions that we are living through. And we would like to create solutions for these conditions. And we know, because we study and we get out, we know that other communities are also experiencing these conditions. And we want to be able to connect with those communities through our message, be it in English and, having it translate across multiple communities here in the US or in Canada, or to have it in Spanish and have it travel across Latin America and have people be able to play with these ideas there, So I think it varies, and then at the same time, we're oftentimes not thinking about that necessarily and more thinking about the justice imperative.
Years ago, I took an excellent class on Latin American journalism with a professor in New York named Mario Murillo, who had a very interesting perspective on, political movements in Latin America. He says nobody knows how to have a revolution quite like the folks living in Latin America, and I, history has showed us or demonstrated rather that is very true. That it's almost like the people, especially in some of these areas, you call it the borderlands, are looking for a better system, a better way. And you definitely speak to that in your writing and your music. I think the kind of the messaging being that you're superseding traditional political structure, and really looking towards the community as the overarching element that dictates how people should be operating, as opposed to having, you know, I guess what we have now, which is more of a centralized, kind of a federal government.
Yeah.
With the election, and obviously the outcome of the election not favoring folks from indigenous backgrounds and migrant cultures, and this sort of like this new xenophobia that America seems to be very proud of, which I'm very disappointed in personally. How do you see your music trying to close that gap or act as a centralizing force now that we're in this new paradigm?
Yeah, it's wonderful. You know, I can't help but think about Fred Hampton and those Chicago Panthers, and the insight that they had, foresight that they had, to try to build relationships with other oppressed groups like white supremacists, and to bridge those fractures, those manufactured fractures.
Yes.
And what Michelle Alexander calls the racial bribe, right? And to then to build a true revolution, right? That is considering all oppressed people. And to, you know, speaking of the election, like I don't think there's benefit for anybody except for billionaires.
I couldn't agree with you more there.
and that, unfortunately, this group of people have preyed upon especially poor white people, and have leveraged that racial bribe like never before. Because there's and this has repeated itself throughout history, there's no better weapon than to blame immigrants, and to blame black people, and so on and so forth, right?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I think we really have to think about our strategy, the organizing strategy, right? Because yes, we're musicians, but we're also organizers. We're also thinking as organizers. We're also moving as organizers in our communities. And we're not just standing on stage and singing songs about revolutionary ideas and experiences, but we're actually on the ground working with people, building power, you know, like building collective muscles so that there can be a new imaginary and a new imagination around what government looks like. We've been fixed into this structure that, for all intents and purposes, can be incredibly powerful, but the way that it's played out has been through this white supremacist, patriarchal, capitalist lens and power dynamic, right? And so it doesn't allow for what people call democracy to actually happen, right? It sort of creates this power vacuum, and then it creates this whole circus show that is pawned off as democracy. And so now, you know, we're in this critical moment in the history of not only this country, but the world. And we're seeing all these things happen, from what they call a housing crisis, which is actually a greed crisis, to the genocide of an entire people. And, you know, we're not there yet where we know, like, how do we respond to this collectively so that we can stop these things, right? People are trying. It's not that people aren't trying, and young people are doing an amazing job. And like, it blew me away. The response of young people in this country blew me away. And so how do we better support them so that, because that this is their world now, right? And
sure.
And we have to also be accountable and say, fuck, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
We have to say, darn, we didn't think forward enough to be able to hand them a different world from the world we received, And I went through panic attacks as a child thinking about nuclear war. And so we lived through all of that. We still had the, I don't know if you experienced this, but we still had the air raid drills when we were kids. And it was terrifying. Those things were terrifying. And so what kind of people are we raising, right? And so the response of young people gave me so much hope and so much energy to keep fighting and to keep building and also celebrating.
Yeah, one thing that I've noticed over the last couple of days, especially as the results have come in from the different parts of the United States, the election results, is that the MAGA movement is applauding the fact that they were able to capture a pretty significant Latino and African American group of voters that kind of pushed them over the edge here to win, which I think a lot of people don't necessarily. It's an interesting kind of conundrum because you want to say, on one hand, okay, you understand why certain people want to identify with what is now being called mainstream or what would be populist. On the other hand, you want to say, why would people vote for somebody who clearly doesn't have their interests at heart and has said on the record that they don't have their interests at heart? Yet it seems people still want to identify with the move with this sort of populist movement that the MAGA group puts out. Well, and what are your thoughts on that? Because it's always been a little puzzling to me.
Yeah, my thoughts are that trauma is real, and that there was a time in my community where parents didn't teach their kids how to speak Spanish because they experienced such deep trauma around speaking Spanish that they didn't want their kids to experience that same trauma, and so it was easier to just have them assimilate and only speak English. It's that same process. So and so we dive into this sort of portal of seeking safety in things that are so toxic and so damaging that we end up supporting the very thing that is gonna hurt us the most. And drug addiction is very similar to that. You don't want to feel the thing anymore. You don't want to feel the pain anymore. So you do what you can to try to get rid of the pain. And so, a person from the hood here, working at CVS or, Walmart or whatever, saying, oh, and like saying, I love Trump is it's exactly that, right? It's like, okay. And then at the same time, if we look at the way that the indoctrination happens from a very young age in our school systems and the push to like to weed out any sort of critique on the way that this country emerged, then you have people with that don't have all the information. And so like the founding fathers, quote unquote, I will use that, the so-called founding fathers were slave-owning rapists at best.
Right.
And so what do we expect? That's the legacy of this country. And so who do we have in coming up in the White House now? Who's coming in is a super racist, misogynistic rapist who was actually convicted, right? And so on and so forth. And so that legacy continues. It is not, it's, we shouldn't be surprised. We should be angry, and we should also be reflecting and thinking about how we're gonna get out of this mess. And at the same time, we have to contextualize everything and understand that these systems are real. They're still at large. We are not in a post-racial society. We are very much in the thick of a very dangerous moment in the history of humanity. And the planet is not happy. The planet is in danger on so many levels. And humanity is in danger, like our own humanity, being able to feel and think with empathy and to create, to desire pathways of understanding and connection. That is all at jeopardy.
I agree with everything you're saying here, and it goes back to, I think a lot of people feel like if they get on the bandwagon per se, or they grab a flag and start going rah rah rah, like it's almost like that the system will acknowledge them and take them along for the ride of prosperity. But as you and I know, that is not the case, and that's not bound by any sort of specific race. I mean, that goes across the board. Folks that are struggling will continue to struggle, and I think that regardless of whether you wave a you wave a flag for the popular party, that your community and what you're trying to build locally is going to be lead to greater success than trying to identify with a nationalist movement. One thing I really love about your writing is that you come from a place of education, and as we've learned in the last 20 minutes or so, that your influences are deeply rooted in social justice and creating a better sort of model for people to exist in a more harmonious way. When you perform for different groups, are they acknowledging the sort of depth of the songwriting? Are they picking apart the messaging and receiving the message the way that you intend?
Yeah, I would say for the most part, yes. And that's part of the reason why we don't like that we're not famous, like, because we make decisions, based on an entirely different criteria. And we and it's not for everybody, the way that mass marketing works is that it pushes narratives that are sexy. I mean, even revolutionary narratives can be sexy, but it's about how they're delivered and how they're pushed through an industry. And what happens to those narratives when they're pushed through that industry is that they become oftentimes moot or mute. And so we have to think about behaviors and then impact, right? And this is very transformative justice, this thinking. And so what is the behavior as an artist, or what is the thing that we're saying that is articulating a behavior within a particular song, right? Or a verse. And then what is the impact that we want to have, right? And so that your question is exactly that, like, are we having impact? And so there's been different moments where, for example, we played at the Kennedy Center and we sang a song called Intifada that we have. And after the show, all these Palestinian women came up to us and they thanked us for singing for Palestine,
Wow.
And for me, that is exactly what we're there for. There have been times where parents, take their little kids to see us because, we wrote this whole album about animals, and their children love these songs about animals, and the parents love them too because they can understand the sort of the double entendre. We're singing about animals, but we're really talking about human beings, right? So whether it's the ants that, come together after a heavy storm and that destroys the sort of anthill, and they come together and they rebuild it, right? Whether it's that, or it's like the pigeon who is full of oil and one foot and one eye, and but is still trying to woo the other pigeon because he still has intact his desire to love and to be loved, And so, like, all these stories about, these the coyote, like, being misunderstood and, coming to your garden and feasting on your pet, but like us not thinking about how we're encroaching upon its natural habitat. right? And thinking about ways in which, displacement and has been part of the colonial project and so on and so forth. And so, these moments are really beautiful and meaningful, and I can tell so many stories about them, and the best evidence of impact is a story.
Sure is. And stories are so well translated into music. And I think a lot of people underestimate the power of music, especially intelligently written music that's not pedestrian. Whereas if you have something of depth to say, conveying that message through lyrics and through melody is incredibly useful to drive the point home. Let's talk about your colleague Martha Gonzalez, because she brings a lot of looks seems like she brings a lot of flair to the group as well as substance. Between the fact that she's obviously incredibly talented, highly intelligent, and well educated, and can also dance. So let's talk about how she got involved. I think the story here is so cool.
Yeah, Martha is one of a kind. Martha is a beast. Martha is my favorite singer, probably. Yeah, certainly one of the most talented human beings I've ever encountered. I had a different singer at the beginning of this band, and her name was Lilia Hernandez. She decided to go to grad school, and so she left the band. And I was looking for a singer, and I was studying with a guitar player back in the day named Marcos Loya. And he, I would, I didn't have money, so I would pay for my lessons by being his roadie. So he'd have gigs, and I'd go set his equipment up and, have him tuned up. I'd sound check the band, I'd do the whole thing, and then he'd show up and just jump on stage and, be the star and then leave. And then we, so he had another roadie doing the same thing. His name was Mark. So Mark and I were talking one day. I was like, "Hey, I'm looking for a singer." And he says, "Oh man, I know this great singer. She goes to UCLA. She's in ethnomusicology and blah, blah, blah." And I was like, "Oh man, give me her number." So he gave me her number. I paged her. And she came over. We set up a time to meet. She came over, and we played some boleros. We played some other Mexican music, and then I showed her some of the songs, the original songs that we had written, and she's like, "Yeah, I can do the gig." And from then we just hit it off, and we ended up getting married and having a kid, and the rest is history. She really, when she came into the band, she really had such a strong presence and voice, and I mean that in all the ways that, it was when the band started to take off creatively.
And sometimes you need that catalyst. It's amazing what a member or two can bring to a musical organization, especially when you're not expecting the direction that they're gonna take you in creatively, and you say, "Oh, this is working out really nice." It's pretty cool. Now traveling to New York, and you have an opportunity to perform, on this side of the coast of. What do you expect to get out of the performances here when while you're here, what are you hoping to achieve?
In New York, we're playing at Carnegie Hall, our first time playing there. And it's a show with another band who is the generation after us. Same tradition, Chicano music, and they're called La Santa Cecilia. And when we were a young band, we would play a lot, and this young girl would show up to our shows, and she was a huge fan, especially of Martha. And we'd always talk, and I'd see her singing on Olvera Street and doing her things, and I was like, "Man, this kid's got a powerful voice." And then before you knew it, there emerges her band, La Santa Cecilia, and they've done amazing work. They've done an incredible job. Same idea, just different sound. And of course, there's things that are you'll see that are very similar. We have a lot of the same musical languages that we speak. It's just that we're different people, and so it comes out differently. But the show that we're doing is about the history of our people, of our struggle, of our music. We're doing some covers. We're doing some of their songs. We're doing some of our songs. But what we're doing that is really exciting is that we're mixing it all up. And so it's not like they're playing, we're playing. It's looked at as one ensemble, and then we have different elements that kind of get on stage at different moments and play these songs out. And so Marta will be singing on some of their songs, Marisol will be singing on some of our songs, the percussionist, the drummer, the bass player. We're mixing it all up. And that makes it so much fun because we love each other and we care about each other, and we it's always interesting and exciting when you get to play with, people outside of this ensemble you're used to playing with.
Absolutely incredible. For those of you just joining us on One World, we're speaking with Quetzal Flores from the band Quetzal, and they will be performing in New York, November 15th, at Carnegie Hall, a show not to miss. For those that will be attending or who are considering attending, any sneak previews of what's to come at the show? What can they expect? It'll be in addition to the amazing mashup with your co-collaborators here, which I think is going to be absolutely terrific.
Yeah, one of the other things is that this show began because you know who Cheech Marin is, right?
Of course.
Yeah, so Cheech opened up a museum. He's an art collector, and this dude, he understood some things before a lot of us understood them. So he began collecting Chicano art back in the day, like back in the day. And he has a massive collection of Chicano art, and he opened a museum called the Cheech Marin Center for Chicano Art and Culture. And every year they have a big concert fundraiser. And so the first year where they opened, we played with Los Lobos there at the opening fundraiser. And then this last year we did this show, and it was fabulous. It was fantastic. And so just to give them a shout out also, I was like, oh, we're traveling to Carnegie Hall. You know what? I'm going to call up Maria Esther, who's the artistic director of the Cheech, and I'm going to ask her if she'll curate the visuals for this show. So I gave her the set list. I gave her the script, and she put together a set from Cheech's collection of images. And so you're going to see a bunch of beautiful artwork that is also from our community. So it's like the sort of collective brilliance and intelligence of our community will be on full display.
That's terrific. It's so funny you bring up Cheech Marin. Just a couple of days ago, and this is a true story, I was going through some old clips of things, and the song Mexican Americans came up. My wife had never heard it before. I said, well, let me play you something, that you might find amusing. So I play her the song, and she goes, well, she goes, isn't that kind of offensive? I said, no, not really. I said, if you think about what the context of it is actually kind of poignant. The way that they're illustrating a stereotype and at the same time acknowledging a stereotype and also saying, but yes, but there's more to it than that.
Funny story, also true story. The Conga Room is this club here, still around, it was a kind of a big deal back in the day. And so we Cheech was doing a comedy show there one night, and they needed a house band, and one of the owners of the Conga Room was a friend. He's like, hey, can you guys be the house band for Cheech, blah blah blah, learn these songs. So we had to learn all those songs, right? And so Mexican Americans was one of them, and he sang it with us, and it was really fun and hilarious and the whole thing, right? And then this one comedian gets on stage, and he's bombing, right? And so side note is that I'm kind of skinny, and I've always been this way, and at that time I had a shaved head, not all the way down, but just really, really short, and so I probably looked a lot skinnier even, right?
Right.
And so this guy's bombing, and he's telling all these jokes, and we're kind of on stage still in the background, just getting ready. As soon as he ends, we're gonna start the music again, and so he says a joke, and I cackled because I thought it was funny, but nobody in the audience laughed, right? And he turns around and he's like, "Well, the crackhead thought it was funny." And oh my gosh, the rest of his set was just going in on me. And everyone's laughing at this point, right? Of course. And so I just sat there and took it, and it was funny. And so, but that was our moment with back in the day with Cheech. And then, being a part of the museum in any way is always incredible.
Yeah, I love the fact that that cultural phenomenon of Cheech and Chong has blossomed into something that is culturally significant at this point. And you think about how forward-thinking those two guys were and their team were to come up with all that content at a time when it was an uncomfortable subject and still is kind of an uncomfortable subject. And they said, well, let's approach it from a place of humor and love. And I think they won a lot of people over with that. The fact that it became so mainstream and adored by the general public, that definitely has the ability to, as you said before, art and music can be a teaching tool for people that don't necessarily understand something that's culturally significant. Well, anyway, Kitsa, thanks so much for taking the time to be on One World today. Again, this Friday at Carnegie Hall, I highly recommend you go check it out. For our audience, you will not be disappointed. And again, if we want to find out more about your project, they want to get in touch, what's the best way to get information on Kitsa the band?
Instagram would be the best way, and it's Quetzal Music.
All right. You heard it from the source, Kitsa Music on Instagram. We're going to hear a lot more. And good luck on your show Friday. I'm hoping to see you guys tear it up.
Brother, what a pleasure. Thank you for all of this.
Absolutely. One World Radio. We'll be right back.
89.5 FM. 89.4. 89.4.
Ikshisan Junction. Yamint Turich. Yamint Iretaranapuch. Wekshin Wanda Peratamashachin. Eskach Yamint Menkun Harash. Eskach Hangarih Pirak. Eskach Trinoteres Marwa Kuchan Trupurich. Nenengan Hucha Wandak. Nenengan Hucha Shukuparak. Kanenengan Hucha Hamak. Eskach Hatzishkach Pajamint Hangangari Piran. Kahatzishkach Patrin Chandrin. Hucha Junction Hangangarin. Kachat Nutrinuchandrin Hangangarin. Invocate Jamit Menkun Hukaparas. Intention is a waxing key, one tap per session. Jamin Turi, Jamin Director and Apuch, Keskaxin Tatario Sucha Kure, Junction, Kayamin Char, Kumajikana Puch.
And roll.
One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
Email from school. About the incident today.
Scary.
Tell me about it. Did you have any idea that was going on?
None. I mean, you saw Derek at the game last night, too. Did you have a clue?
No. But you know, teachers like me, parents, we don't always know as much as you guys do. Kids hear first about what's going on with other kids.
Half the time, it's rumors.
It can be hard to tell sometimes. But if you have a concern about a friend who's having trouble with alcohol, prescription drugs, bullying, violence, anything, you need to tell an adult. Mom or me, a teacher, coach, school counselor, someone you know and trust.
Dad, no kid is gonna tell an adult about that kind of stuff.
I get it, but if we don't know, we can't help. Speaking up about a problem, that's what helping a friend is all about.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Today, one in five Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges, but many of us don't know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we work every day to eliminate stigma and advance mental health. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
Now, opening the vaults on over 100 years of recorded music history. Welcome to Cruising the Decades Global Edition. Get ready to go cruising through 100 years of popular music. This is a journey through music history from someone with a rather ridiculous record collection. Here's your host for Cruising the Decades, Brad Savage.
Radio broadcasting, record collecting, the power of music. Let's listen together to some classic old recordings. Welcome to Cruise in the Decades. I'm Brad Savage, your humble host. I enjoy music so much, and I put a lot of time and effort and thought into which songs will be shared each week on Cruise in the Decades. This is episode 109. On today's program, a silly song from Spike Jones in the 1940s and an original Sun Records selection, 1953, later covered by Elvis. Plus, Neil Young's high-profile special backing band in the 90s. And something entirely hip from the early 70s. What is it? Plus, a spotlight on 60s-era folk music from Tom Paxton. This is Cruisin' the Decades, 100 Years of Music. And this show is a little bit left of center, a little bit edgy, a little bit bohemian. I do enjoy that term bohemian and funky and a little bit unusual, maybe a little bit anti-conformist. Here is a bohemian song from 1910. This is singer Joe Maxwell. This is called Come to the Land of Bohemia. This is Cruisin' the Decades, 100 Years of Music.
If you are worried with your business cares and everything seems to go wrong, if you are troubled with family affairs and life seems to you no sweet song, I know a land that is happy and gay, where sweet music softly they hum. A place where they'll drive all your troubles away. I will take you there if you will come. Come to the land of Bohemia. Come where the lights brightly shine. Come where that fellow makes love to his shallow. Oh, come where all good fellows dine. Come where the girlies are fairer. Oh, land of Bohemia, the land where nobody goes home. Come to the land of Bohemia, come where the light brightly shines, come where that fellow makes love to his shadow, oh, come where all good fellows die. Come where the girlies are fairer over the Wetzburg Falls. Come to the land of Bohemia, the land where nobody goes home.
After amassing an absurd record library that takes up his entire basement, host Brad Savage decided to share over 100 years of music with the world from super-powered shortwave broadcasters via internet streaming and on the top independent community and music radio stations across North America and the world. This is Cruisin' the Decades, 100 years of music.
Don't say nothing, he just keeps rolling, he keeps on rolling along. He don't plant taters, he don't plant cotton, and them that plants them, he soon forgotten. But old man River, he just keeps rolling along. You and me, we sweat and strain, body all aching and racked with pain. Hold that heart, lift that veil, get a little drunk and you land in jail. I get weary and sick of trying, I'm tired of living and feared of dying. But old man River, he just keeps rolling on.
You don't ask to make the white horse frown. Bend your knees and bow your head and pull that rope until you're dead.
Sweat and strain, body all aching and racked with pain.
Cruising the Decades, 100 years of music. When you talk about the great American songbook and standards and songs that everybody knows and everybody sang back in their day, that's Old Man River right there. And that is from the production of Showboat, from the musical by...
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio Program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP, Brookville, LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR, Loudonville, Siena College, 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Mahwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts, Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
89.5 Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, 88.7 WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.3 WRCT, Pittsburgh. You're listening to the One World Radio Community Show. I'm your host, Cody Millar. Joining with me today is Rick Hubert from New York and Lydia McQuinna from Bush Radio in Cape Town. How are you all doing today? We're finally, at least for us in the U.S., shifting over to spring. And Lydia, it looks like y'all are leaving your summer.
So we are leaving our summer. We're heading into autumn on this side. So it's a bit, cold. It's starting to get a bit cold in Cape Town on this side. And you, Ricky?
What is cold in Cape Town?
Cold in Cape Town. It is... How can I say this? It's.
I wouldn't expect anything lower than like 30 degrees.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is cold in Cape Town to all of you?
Like it's 22 degrees here.
For our American audience that doesn't know Celsius, that's, only 70 degrees.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was doing the math in my head and I was like, yeah, that doesn't quite add up to cold here. But I'm sure we can have a lot more conversations about climate, and temperature today as we introduce our guest. Sir Robert Watson was chief scientist at the United Kingdom Department of Food, Environment, and Rural Affairs, chief scientist and director for environmentally and socially sustainable development at the World Bank, and associate director for environment in the Office of Science and Technology Policy in the Executive Office of the President of the United States, and director of the Science Division and chief scientist for Office of Mission to Planet Earth at NASA. He currently co-chairs international assessments for global environmental policies at the United Nations, and we're honored that he can now add One World Radio guest to his resume. Bob, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, pleasure to be here today.
Now, Bob, I just threw a mouthful at everybody of the list people listening to the show about all the work that you've done. Give us kind of a synopsis of what you do in your life and your career and what you currently do at the United Nations.
I've chaired for the last literally 40 years, since 1980, a series of international assessments bringing together the very best scientists from all over the world, developed, developing countries. We've written documents assessing what happens to stratospheric ozone when we put different chemicals into the atmosphere. We've got assessments on climate change. How are we changing the climate? And what are the implications of changing the climate? And can we stop climate change or limit climate change? Assessments on biodiversity. What are the threats to biodiversity? What are the implications of losing biodiversity? How can we conserve and restore biodiversity? The current document is looking at climate change, loss of biodiversity, pollution of land, air and water, and land degradation. How do these issues all affect each other? What's happening to land? What's happening to pollution around the world? And then the question is, how can we achieve environmental targets like clean water, clean air, limit climate change, conserve biodiversity? And the current document is looking to see how can we transform our economic and finance systems all over the world? How do we have clean energy? How do we produce our food more safely, etc.? So fundamentally, all of the large assessments I work on are with the very best scientists from all over the world. And what we do is we assess scientific knowledge and present it to policymakers, explaining what the issues are, but also, much more important, what are the potential solutions?
When you talk about biodiversity, many of our audience may not be familiar exactly what you're referring to. So how are you operationalizing it in this context?
Well, what we do on biodiversity, we ask ourselves, are we destroying our major ecosystems? What's happening to the forests of the world, the mangrove systems, the coral reefs, the grassland systems? And if indeed these are degrading for different reasons, like cutting down tropical forests, polluting our coral reefs, we then ask, what are the implications for the species? What's happening to the animals? What's happening to the plants? And then we ask ourselves, what are the implications of losing biodiversity for what we call ecosystem goods and services? Our ecosystems, our biodiversity, they help to clean the air. They help to control climate. They manage severe storms. They manage disease and outbreaks. They provide our food. They provide our clean water. So we ask ourselves, what's happening to the ecosystems?